you know, the companies that have been with us from the very beginning that are have exploded, you know, and yeah. they're doing 10 times the revenue. It's like,
episode 21 of the Deal Ranch. Gray Vic, thanks for having me in the office, man. A couple days before the new year. Glad to squeeze this in.
Yeah, Matt. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, happy to be here, obviously. But thanks to Marshall Cooper, our buddy that set this up at United Bank. So if anyone needs anything in the Wilmington area, obviously reach out to Marshall or anyone at United Bank. They're a good, really good team to work with. But really unique episode, really unique business. I'm excited to hear a little bit more about the billboard business. So you're the first billboard guy I've had on, and I was coming down from Maryland back home for on Monday after Christmas, and I saw a handful of your billboards on 95. So that's really cool. But do you want to give an intro on yourself, Gray, and your current role at Gray Outdoor?
Yes. So I currently am, I guess, the chief bottle washer at Gray Outdoor. We're trying to do everything at some point, but more or less my role now is more of a general manager of the company. And obviously, we're a sales organization, and we're selling advertising on our space.
Yeah.
And so that's a real big part of my everyday job is on the sales side, mm-hmm. along with continuing the growth side of the company as well. So just continuing to try to keep growing, but then also maintaining all the existing signs. So we're, you know, it always seems like a billboard could just be just a random investment, but it really is just another company or similar to any other company and how we operate. And we have a really good team of, there's three other salespeople and then myself. And,
yeah.
And then I've got two other real estate guys. So we're, you know, we're rocking and rolling and we've been very blessed.
I love it. Yeah, I'm excited to hear. So what is the kind of current overview? So how many faces, I guess you guys call them, different sign types, like what markets are you in, and then what other services right now is under Gray Outdoor?
So we have around 700 or so faces, about 30 digitals, I think 29 digitals
wow.
at this point. So we're continuing to grow our digital inventory. That's really a big part of our sales, you know, selling mm-hmm. digital inventory. Our static inventory a lot of times gets filled up and it stays filled up, you know, for many years. And so we're mainly in North and South Carolina now, mostly east of 95 is the majority of our assets. 95 East is the majority of the assets that we own.
Got it.
And so, yeah, we're mainly the billboard rentals. And like I said, our sales organization sell a lot of advertising and help our customers grow.
Yeah.
And that's really a big part of it is our customers, if we can get their name out there, they can build their brand. They keep coming back to us. They want to advertise more. And a lot of our companies we've had on for 10, 12 years plus
wow.
have just 10 times their business, like have just really done – they've grown their brand so much and their businesses have just taken off. Now, not just because of the billboards. Obviously, it's been a very good compliment
sure.
to a company that could really perform well. They yeah. can go out there and get it done for their customers as well.
Right.
So we can always kind of get their name out there, but then they have to really perform too.
Yeah.
So that's really a big thing for them is the companies that have really grown through that, through the advertising have been because they've been able to really perform well and for their customers. But then we've also really helped them to get their name out there and be seen and to build that brand.
I love it. We were chatting for a while before this, but I told you I had quite a few questions just about how the billboard industry functions as a whole. But before there, so you studied accounting in school. After school, you got into the real estate business, buying and flipping. Can you give an overview of the pre-billboard days?
Yeah. No, it was I mean, I guess my story was, you know, I went to UNCW
yep.
and I got an undergrad and a master's in accounting. And I did that for about a year. You know, I did the tax returns on the tax side and I did audit. And it was, I graduated in 2004, 2005. And really got to see a lot of different types of companies and just kind of get a lot of overviews of business and how, you know, business was going to operate. And the tax side was really big because I kept seeing all these people that had all these assets.
Yeah.
And they were producing income. And I was like, oh, wow, that's what all these rich people are doing. They have, you know, interest income. They had rental income from rental properties. And everything was flowing through on the tax return. So I think that was a real big epiphany for me to say, hey, this is what I need to be doing.
Right.
And then so I was just on a quest to keep learning. I was after school, like, I need to keep learning more.
Sure.
Similar to what you're doing here with the podcast. It's like, hey, I want to keep learning. And you get to meet so many different people in different industries and just pick up so much more information that may lead you on a path to where you're going to go. You
100%.
Know, if you just believe and have faith that you're going in the right direction, it just – things just kind of fall in place.
Absolutely.
And so actually I was on an audit and my senior was doing this business. So he was actually putting out illegal signs, which is kind of crazy now. He was putting out illegal signs, you know, the We Buy Houses signs.
Oh, interesting. Just at street corners?
Yeah, they called them bandit signs. So they would just put them out, you know, random places. They're illegal in the right of way. So they weren't legal signs, but he had this whole list of leads and I was like, oh man, Let me, you know, call on a couple of those because I started learning a little bit about real estate business, how to do wholesale, how to buy and fix and flip. And so I had learned a little bit about that business just from reading books. And then I started buying all the courses and everything, just getting all the information. I was a part of the Real Estate Investing Association here in Wilmington.
Cool.
And just networking with other investors, learning from them. And then just a quest, just like, I just needed to learn everything I could about it. And there was so much to learn. It was like, you know, lease options or, you know, there was just so many different avenues that you could go to buy and sell real estate.
Mm-hmm.
And it just really intrigued me. He had this whole list of leads. And I remember him showing me, hey, I've got all this list of leads. And I said, man, like, let me just go through it. And he's like, I think they're mostly kind of dead leads. And they're not really deals, you know, but there are people that were interested in that. In my mind, I was thinking, these are all deals.
Right.
You know,
right.
They're calling you before they want to sell. They don't actually want to, they're calling you before they call a realtor. Or maybe they already called a realtor and the realtor's like, sorry, I can't help you.
Right.
And so to me, that was huge. I was thinking, this is a great business. Mm-hmm. If I can intercept this lead before they actually go to the market, you just have this opportunity to buy a property before anybody else even knew it was available.
So were these leads that he was calling dead leads, these were voicemails? Like these were people that called that needed a return call, you're saying?
Right, that called off of his signs, off of the bandit signs. He was mainly just doing the bandit signs. That was one of his only things he was using to get leads.
Wow.
And so he had people calling him saying, hey, I want to sell my property. Whether or not they were motivated or not, that was it. And he was really cherry picking hard. He was just waiting for that one that just seemed
home runs.
It was going to be perfect. Yeah. And Dallas was a great guy too. I really learned a lot from him. And he was my actually boss on the job where I was at this audit. And we were working like 60 hours a week. So I was a little bit bored and I was learning, but I was a little bored and I was wanting to go do sales. You know, I wanted to be out talking to people. I wanted to be doing something. So I'm like, hey, let me go through those. The first one that I called on that he had a list of was, it was actually a lady who had a house in Castle Hayne.
Oh, cool.
And, right outside of Wilmington.
Yeah.
And it was actually a sad story. So her husband had died in the middle of building this house.
Oh.
It was a mobile home in front of it and then a 2,500 square foot brick house behind it. Mostly built, but the front had part, the door never got put on and it was kind of caving in. The front, I mean, it needed a lot of work.
Sure.
But for just the materials, I mean, it was a house mostly built there on a half acre lot. And she's like, hey, you know, I've tried everything to sell this property and I can't sell it. The realtors don't want to list it because it needs so much work and nobody wants this thing. She's like, I'll just do whatever. So I was like, I'll buy it, you know, like, I had no clue what I'm doing.
Of course.
No clue what I was doing, but I just knew, I knew enough that you could do a wholesale deal. You could get something under contract and then take it to an investor that would want to buy it, fix it, and flip it.
Yeah.
And so I knew just enough to be dangerous. And I think I ended up getting under contract for like $27,000. And it was, you know, I think when I started, I might have been at like 40-something thousand. And then eventually it was like, hey, I can't really do it for this. And then we ended up kind of renegotiating the deal. And then we ended up at, I don't know how we ended up at 27,000, but it just sounded like a good number.
Sure.
And then took that deal to the real estate investing group, and the guy, a builder, somebody who was really good at building that, right. That knew exactly what to do with that property, how to fix it and everything. He bought it for $40,000. He actually closed on it for $40,000.
Wow.
And then we just got that assignment fee for $13,000.
Cool.
And that was, it took a few, I remember it was a couple months in there, and it was maybe 2005 around then, right after I graduated college, and maybe a few months after I had been on the job, maybe 6 months. And so the opportunity in that business seemed great. I was like, well, gosh, I can make, you know, $13,000 pretty quick if I can, in the next year, you know, this is before kids, before everything right, else, you know, before really any other obligations. I lived at the beach in an apartment. I had two roommates, and I remember just like locking myself in my room that I was renting, and just like
getting dialed in.
I had a list, and I was just I'm gonna just hammer these leads. You know, I'm gonna get all of them.
I love it.
And then so I kind of got more involved with him, where I started doing the signs, and we started putting them out. And it's funny because I'm actually doing legal signs now.
Now, yeah.
When I first really started in business, it was, you know, illegal signs.
Yeah.
And I actually paid a fine to the city of Wilmington years ago.
For the illegal signs?
Yeah, because I didn't really realize, hey, these are not, like, allowed. I didn't even really, I mean, I think you might have realized it, but you didn't really, it wasn't something that you're thinking, oh, man, they're going to, like, hammer you with a fine if you do it, you know.
Sure.
But it was almost worth it at a certain point in time, because I think we were generating so many leads, and you know, at that point in time, I started realizing I'm gonna probably have to leave this job because it's kind of getting in the way of me doing deals. I was sitting on an audit, my phone was just ringing, you know, because I was just doing sales. I just had my list, and I'm just gonna hammer these leads. And at a certain point, I realized it was holding me back to stay at the job. But it was nice because I had that income.
Yeah.
With that steady income, you're able to borrow money.
Yeah.
You know, 2005, 2006, they're lending to everybody. Hey, yeah. you want a house? Everybody can have a house. You know? You want three houses? Go ahead. You know?
So what happened after that? The flipping business started to scale. It was just you and...
Yeah, so Dallas and I, we did a few deals. I mean, we flipped quite a few properties. I probably have flipped, you know, 30, 40 properties in a year and a half, 2 years. I mean, we started really turning them, and we had buyers and I found a couple other investors that I worked with that we really started turning the properties quick. Then I got involved in then this more of like a foreclosure deal. So we were door knocking foreclosures.
Yeah.
And so that was... It was a lot. I mean, there was just so much to learn in that business.
Yeah.
I mean, there was just so many different avenues of buying, and we were going after out of town owners, mm-hmm. Where they were absentee owners, where they owned property here, but they lived out of state.
Yep.
And I think I remember I bought a lot downtown Wilmington. It was, I think, a quarter acre lot. And the guy called me off one of my letters, and he was like, I just need to sell it. I just need to get rid of it right away. I'm about to potentially have a tax lien. I just need to sell this right away. And then, so $2,000, I bought this property. It's probably like $100 now. You know, I don't even know what it's worth now. But it was basically like an illegal car lot. These guys are kind of squatting on it. And also he was about to get this tax lien. So he's like, I just need to unload it. And I think I held it for a year and sold it for like $13,000 or something. It wasn't like a huge deal in the grand scheme of everything. I probably should have just held on to it for the $2,000 investment.
Right, right.
But just being out there and being in the field and just hammering stuff and just trying, the deals fall into place when you try. You know? Like, I don't think you get the deal unless you're actually out there trying. You know?
100%.
And I was pretty successful in doing that business. I mean, we were able to generate some cash by doing the wholesale.
Mm-hmm.
And then I kept turning every time we would turn the money over. And then originally that $13,000, I put it all back in more advertising.
Oh, nice.
You know, so doing
those signs, street signs, you're saying?
Some of the street signs, letters, and then, you know, pamphlets and flyers or door knocking. just getting our name out there to all those potential sellers. That was where we really, you know, being willing to go back all in again and not like, hey, I'm going to make $13,000. I'm going to go like buy a, you know, watch or something. It's like, you're just like, good. Put that right back into the business and just keep going and just keep hammering it until, because I'm like, hey, if I can't, in a year, if I can't find two or three deals like this, replace my income, then I'll just have to go back and get another job, you know? Yeah. So I remember telling my dad, hey, I'm going to quit my job. And he's looking, you're going to do what? Like, that sounds really risky. I'm thinking it's more risky for me to stay where I'm at. I need to go. You know, I need to do this. Like, I'm just going to just try. And if it doesn't work, then so be it. You know, it wasn't what it was meant to be, but.
100%. Have to swing the bat. So at what point do you, so this was 2005, you start flipping. You meet your first partner for Waterway Outdoor?
Yep.
What was that? So how did you, what is the story behind meeting this partner? Because you guys started 50-50, right? Doing billboards.
Yep.
His dad was in the business, but where were you with flipping houses and when did you kind of push all into billboards? Like, what was the transition?
I mean, I was living at the beach and the guy I met at the time, his dad was in the business. And he was like skateboarding around on the street. And I was like, hey man, what do you do for work? Cause at the time I, you know, was doing really well in real estate and buying and selling. And I was like, I got a good thing going.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, I do billboards. And I was like, well, how does that work? He's like, well, you kind of got to be born into it. You know, I'm like, I don't know. Like, I'm not going to really accept that as an answer. You know, like there has to be, I've driven down the highway before and I've seen it. Like it's something that's caught my attention before that this could be an opportunity. And, so just kind of kept picking at him at first. It was like, I'm not really going to tell you anything. And, then we kind of just kept talking. And at that time it was, he really needed an opportunity at that time as well.
But he wasn't in the billboard business?
He was doing it, but mainly like maintaining signs for other people and just doing like just kind of odds and ends jobs. Had actually built some signs and sold them.
Wow.
And then he kind of went the buying watches route and boats and Denalis and then was like at a point where I've got to do something, you know? So it really was just like mainly a timing thing because I was still successful in that real estate business. If I kept doing that, no telling where it would have led to at that point in time because I knew so much about that business. And really the timing was the 2000, we started, you know, looking for sign locations in 2007. It was right before, you know, the market really tanked. Mm-hmm. The first signs that we built was 2008. Around May 2008, you started kind of feeling that squeeze. We had real good success, built a couple signs in a real growing area over Pender County, Hampstead area. Mm-hmm. And it was just that area was booming. The back then, still booming now. Obviously, it's growing a lot more than what it was.
Right.
And so we had so much success right off the bat. It was like, oh, wow, this is really, you know, it took a long time because there was just a lot of gaps in his knowledge base about it that we had to like, so I had to more or less start over together, figure out a lot of things and learn how to do this, like learn about all the rules, regulations, ordinances, and figure out how to find a site to put a sign.
Yeah.
So, you know, just going hammering everybody we can for information and then tried a bunch and nothing was working.
Of course, you know, that's how it goes.
Yeah. It was a year before we actually probably found a place that would actually work to permit.
Yeah. This episode of The Deal Ranch is brought to you by Reed's Jewelers. If you're looking for a new watch, Reed's has it. They have a large selection of fine Swiss timepieces from Omega, IWC, Breitling, Grand Seiko, Tudor, and Tag Heuer. Since 1946, Reed's has been devoted to customer service and quality. Find a Reed's store near you or shop online at Reed's.com. That's Reeds.com by clicking the link in the show notes. So I think it's a perfect segue because I want to get back into the billboard story as a whole, but I think a good time to kind of do an overview of the billboard business, right? So you were kind of talking about developing a assigned there, right? But as far as acquiring goes, it looks like there's three different ways you can do it, right? You can lease from the owner, you can do an easement, so buying off a little chunk of land, or buy the property in totality. So can you kind of give it an overview of like how it works on the acquisition side to buy a billboard, kind of go through those options? And then also, if I'm just driving by and I see a lot that I like, what needs to happen for that to be a potential site for a billboard?
Right, right. Yeah. So, so mostly, just acquiring a site or an actually existing sign would be so similar, like due diligence process to buying really any business, just an individual, one individual sign. May not be as much of like a due diligence process because you're only going to really be checking a few things. Mm-hmm. There's like a few boxes to check as permit. Is it permit? Is it legal? Going back through zoning, to figure out like, is this like a conforming site or non-conforming?
Right. But you're just underwriting that deal.
Right.
So what cap rates typically do billboards trade at?
It just depends because you might have something that's just like on like a year to year deal that was built a long time ago and it's on some guy's property that he could be alienated. I mean, it might be worth nothing, you know?
Yeah.
But like a good solid company, I mean, you can look at the public companies. You got Lamar, Clear Channel, and OutFront. Mm-hmm. You can kind of see how they're valued.
Yep.
You know, usually like 10 to 13 times their billboard cash flow is typically about what the valuation would be. Like a smaller company, smaller market, could be, you know, 8 to 10 times that kind of net income, net operating income. They usually call it billboard cash flow.
Yeah.
So that's kind of how it would be valued. The asset would be valued
for
individual type assets. The bigger the company, the usually typical higher multiple it would bring.
Okay. Yeah.
And the more buyers that would be attractive to private equity and public companies that are out, you know, acquiring other smaller players.
So what are, like, obviously the income side of the business is fairly simple, right? It's just the ad revenue. What are the expenses that are on besides obviously property tax, but like what is kind of standard maintenance and property management? Like, how does that work for you? Like, how do you even manage all 700 of your signs throughout this state?
Yeah, I think everyone's different, you know, because you have, you might have one site that's in a parking lot that's very minimal other maintenance other than, you know, making sure that all your safety's in line, your poles like painted every few years. And then you might have another site that's kind of in the woods that you're having to bush hog it every year, every 2 years. You're going out there spraying, keeping it clear.
Yeah.
So some sites would be significantly more effort as far as maintaining them than others. But yeah, mostly simple, like, you know, your whatever your rent is, your property tax or your actual personal property tax, permit fees, and then your lighting. Those are your typical. And then lighting is a big thing for maintenance as well as continuing to, you know, make sure the lights are on, operating, make sure your timers, everything's cutting on like it's supposed to. So that's really, it becomes like, just a business like any other business, mostly, you know.
But how are you getting feedback? This is probably a silly question, but how are you getting feedback? You have 700 signs, 700 faces in the two states, and I'm sure some on lower traffic roads than others, obviously. How are you getting intel of like this light went out yesterday? Like, how are people passing all 700 signs and telling you when to get back to them? How does that work?
We try to be a little bit more proactive in that because you don't want to be like always waiting for the customer to tell you, hey, your lights are out.
Mm-hmm.
So we do a lot of rides at night. There's a company that makes actually like a remote monitoring that lets you know when lights are out. So and that's something that we're looking at this year, maybe as an investment to, as per sign, there's a cost, but really helps you kind of maintain that. But other than us actually riding out and checking them, monitoring the actual bills, monitoring the actual usage on your power bills, that's really been a big way we've done it over the years.
Got it.
And now that we're at a certain scale of operation, you know, it may be worth that investment to do the remote monitoring smart links.
Got it.
On each sign. Just then that way it kind of takes out, like, kind of have to watch the bills every month. It's going to send you a notification, hey, this light bulb's out or that bulb's out. And obviously, you know, when somebody lets us know, hey, there's an issue over here, because you have power outages and things like that, sometimes it throw things off and knock out timers and the ballast might go out on an older light fixture or an LED. The driver goes bad and it starts blinking.
Right.
So I mean, it's always something. You know?
Sure.
I think it's always going to be something, because I mean, I've got some of the smart links and they're remote monitoring, and we had one that something failed on the smart link failed, and so then my customer went by and said, "Hey, my lights were out over there," and I'm like, "Oh man, I'm supposed to already have this dialed in. The smart link went bad."
Oh, you know? No.
So it's just like it could always be something.
Of
you
course,
know?
Yeah.
But really, just trying to—you gotta stay on top of all
to
that
minimize
stuff.
That. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's a customer service business, right? It's advertising you're selling,
and it's really huge. Yeah, because when you're selling ads, I mean, and you're not really necessarily gonna be standing under that billboard much. Mm-hmm. You're not gonna be like standing there holding a flag or waiting for something. So like, when people contact us, we really want to be fast.
Yeah.
Just right away, we're contacting. You're gonna be the most important thing that happens today. If you call us and there's any type of issue, we're going to be on that super fast. And that's really the biggest way we differentiate ourselves from the bigger competitors, is to just be super nimble, super quick to respond. These customers are the most important thing in our business. I mean, they are the lifeblood of our business. Obviously our landowners and our people, our customers. I mean, when they contact us, there's no gap in response. It's immediate. You're going to get a response immediately, and we will address it immediately.
Love it.
And that's really helped us keep these customers for many years.
I bet.
And obviously with digital now, too, there's a little bit more of a – you're doing a lot of artwork, too, mm-hmm. because digital is best used when they're constantly changing the advertising.
Yeah.
They want to be changing these ads constantly. Yeah, they should be updating it every week, every month. That what's the sale? I mean, you want to be operating the digital billboard like you're operating social media. What's the special today?
Yeah.
You know, what this restaurant, if it's a Mexican restaurant, hey, you got, you know, dollar tacos tonight. You know,
sure.
Look, well, you need to be putting that on that digital. You know?
Just tonight, though. It's not dollar tacos every night.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if they even have dollar tacos anymore.
That's right.
It's like at least like $2.50 everywhere,
yeah.
You know.
Okay, so before I forget, so going back a little bit, so that's more the acquisition side. So for the development side, I'm driving by a lot, and I don't know kind of how you structure your business development, but maybe you're targeting areas that are already zoned or maybe have a future use zoning that would allow billboards. I drive by Farmer Joe's lot, and I'm like, hey, this is perfect. It's got a good curve to it or whatever you may look for. Four stop signs. What are your options from there to like, what do you do in that scenario? Like, how does that development work? So you've got a couple options, the lease, easement, or buy. So like, what were you guys doing back then?
Yeah. So when we started, it was leasing mostly properties because it was obviously a lot of these commercial properties on the highway. So
they're
it was
gigantic tracts of land.
A lot of times you're dealing with a bigger tract that's mm-hmm. going to be a lot more expensive to acquire than what that billboard's worth. You know, a small lease on a billboard. It may not be enough money to move the needle for a big commercial property owner that might be developing that lot. So that,
so you reach out to the owner. What's the structure of that lease? You're paying them a percentage of revenue back.
Exactly. Yeah. Okay. So usually depending on the site, I mean, usually you're about, you know, 20% or so of our revenue would be, you know, 15 to 20%, is going to be about standard on what we actually pay the landowner. Obviously trying to drill down and do all the due diligence, searching all the ordinance, figuring out whether it would actually work at that site. That's going to be a lot of digging and research on our state laws, federal laws, local laws, and the ordinances and regulations there. So that's really a big part of it, is actually being able to find one of those places that it would actually work. You know, like we were talking about earlier,
of course.
You know, hey, if you want to come into, you know, if you go to Myrtle Beach, it's like one side after the other,
boom, 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 boom.
Yeah, one after another. And there, I mean, there's no space left. I mean, they've just taken up every bit of spacing. And so having to be creative on how to actually be able to permit a site is really what we've had to learn more and more about all the different aspects of acquiring properties and actually permitting and ordinances and knowing the laws, knowing the statutes, and knowing where there could be an opportunity where it may not be super apparent. It's really hard to just go, I'm going to go drive down that highway, you know, I'm going to drive down Highway 17 and just go pick off a few spots and go build them. You know, it's, right. It's really like, it's almost like those days are gone. Now you may be able to go a little bit, you know, you can go further and further and further out. You might be able to, you know, find a, you know, place, but it may not be the place where a lot of people want to advertise to though, you know, so really getting those premium spots is, it could be years to do it, you know, absolutely. To get through the permitting.
So when you guys started, then we can talk about great, like when you transitioned, but were you mainly just developing sites when you and your partner started? And then how, what kind of transpired over the next 7 years before 14 when you went out? Like, you're still doing real estate, you have this new partnership. At what point were you jostling away from real estate to just focus on
Almost right away, pretty much. It's hey, the opportunity is really good. I think the billboard business was more of like that cash flow business where, hey, the revenue's coming in every month. If we could build these sites and we would have revenue on a, you know, steadier basis than doing a wholesale business or a fix and flip.
Yeah.
You know, that was like a big chunk and then wait. And then you always were chasing down another deal. So I think that's what I saw was like the biggest opportunity in the business was that kind of steadier revenue. And also it was just really just a win-win kind of deal. I mean, when you did a billboard deal, was you were creating equity from nothing, you know,
for a new site, you're saying.
Right, yeah. Right. So if you were building a sign from the ground up on this new property, there was nothing there. And then all of a sudden you created this equity for the landowner and for the company.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And the state was getting a little cut. The city was getting a little tax. Uh-huh. Everybody was winning in the deal.
Yeah.
You know, when we were buying foreclosures, you had to, and it's not a knock on the business because I think it's still a great business and it does provide a good service to people that might be in trouble that, hey, they need to sell this thing quickly.
Right.
And there's value to that. But it was almost like I always felt like it was for me to win. Somebody had to lose a little bit.
You know?
So in the billboard business, it was like everybody was winning. You didn't have to kind of take, I didn't have to offer you $4,000 for your equity and then get 40, you know? Mm-hmm. But there was always so much, there was still a lot of risk in doing those deals and like a fix and flip because you just never knew what you were going to run into.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the same with every time we go out there and build a sign, there's still a lot of risk involved that construction process is challenging. It always seems like super simple. We should be able to just go out there and build it. But it is challenging, especially in this area. It's really hard to,
I bet,
to drill 20 feet in the ground,
wow.
You know, in like a sandy soil next to the beach, you're caving at like 3 feet. So that's been a big process just to learn how to actually build something in this area is challenging.
I bet it is. What I was hearing on, I don't know if it was another show you did or maybe in an article, but you were talking about the early days of getting into billboards. And, you know, I've seen some of yours that were kind of almost stick built, right, that come out of the water at some sites that you got. And then I heard you tell one story about, I think you were getting old light poles maybe or some sort of recycled metal to build sites with. And then I think maybe another realization when you're like, oh, well, after you build the sign, you still have to go knock on doors to get the advertising. So in those early years, after you do put a new sign up, what is the next step in the process? You still have to get someone to fill the ad.
Yeah,
right? You have two deals. You have this development deal with the landowner,
right?
However you want to structure it, buy, lease, easement, I guess. And then you have the other ad, the ad side, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, it was like, now I got to go to work. You know?
Yeah.
So going back to when we started, it was 2008. We built the first sign. So then we built a few more. I took out a loan. I think we bought 6 signs from a guy. And this was in South Carolina, kind of Marlboro County, actually. I know you had the guy on there from Marlboro County.
Exactly right.
On the show.
Yeah, Marlboro Development.
And they So we bought six signs from them. I think it was, you know, $80,000 deal. And then I borrowed another $150,000 to build five signs.
On sites that they already had?
These were sites that we had gone out and found and located, which were challenging sites and, you know, kind of out, not, they were good sites, you know, 74, 17. They were good sites, they were, this was 2009. This was right at the end, I think it was middle of 2009 to the end of 2009. We built these sites. And I built a few sites on credit cards, you know. And so I was kind of phasing out, going back to what we were talking about earlier, I was phasing out of doing the real estate. Like as soon as I started realizing this opportunity is great, started phasing out of buying more properties. At that time, the properties I was holding, you know, in those year and a half, there was all the equity was gone out of those properties. There was nothing really left. Luckily, I had acquired a piece of land that was, it was 15 lots. It was just a raw piece of land that we cut the road in, permitted it for a small subdivision. And I was kind of holding that, trying to get that kind of developed so we could sell it. You know, the plan was to sell that. So I was kind of in the process of doing that deal. And then I borrowed more money to start the billboard company. So I was borrowing. And then nobody was advertising. 2009, 2010, I mean, there was nobody advertising. And we're a new company, a new billboard company. Nobody knew who we were. And we didn't know how to sell it either. I mean, there was I had no experience doing advertising sales.
Right.
And actually, my roommate at the time, he was selling pharmacy bags. He came in and helped us for a little while, sold a few ads, got a few rented. That we had built, and then because I was having to pay these notes, I was paying landowners. I mean, we were maybe billing $10,000-$12,000 a month, and our expenses were like $14,000, a month, or you know, somewhere around there. So we were negative cash flow because we were borrowing money at 15% at that time. You know, so people keep saying right now, oh man, 7% this is high. I'm like, 7% is that's great. That's still a good deal, you know, because it's almost like the sentiment around the world is interest rates are high.
Of course, yeah.
You know, and the first property that I bought, rental house I bought in 2004 or 2005, it was 6%. You know, that was kind of these are normal rates to me. You know, 3% is just like crazy low. You know?
Of course.
So we went. We kind of really overspent building, really, because the advertising market was just not there at that time. You know, nobody really wanted to buy advertising. Our borrowing costs were real high. And so then I went back to my lender because we borrowed, and I knew enough to, after being in the real estate business, like to understand about how these processes work in the foreclosure business, like buying and selling properties out of foreclosure and dealing with lenders. I knew enough, hey, I gotta go meet with my guys, sit down with them, figure this out because we're not really able to generate enough revenue with these signs to be able to stay in business. We're gonna go out of business if we keep going this route.
Mm-hmm.
So I went to them, sat down, said, hey, we really need you guys to help us or else we won't be able to make it. And then these assets, you're gonna end up taking them back and selling them at a loss. So hey, work with us. And then they said, okay, yeah, what do you need? You know, so we just need to go. We'll still do the same interest. We just need interest only for a year, 2 years. So then all of a sudden, you know, we're billing $12,000 a month, and our payments went from 14 to 10.
Yeah.
So now we have
just slightly above water.
Now we're like barely above water. You know, just like barely. We're like just treading, you know, barely, like almost out of gas. You know, and I remember I went to California because my sister was out there at the time, and I've been a big surfer for since I was like a kid. So this is my life. I'm out there. I'm almost. Not hiding from my problem, but like I was kind of like, what am I gonna do? I'm like,
you're in the shade at least.
I'm like just living based off of credit cards, you know.
Wow.
And through this time, eventually we started. We just that $2,000 a month.
Mm-hmm.
I remember a few sites we went out and we got poles from the power company that were used poles that they had taken down and replaced power line poles. We just had to go out there and grind it out.
And were they just getting rid of them or selling them?
Yeah. I mean, they were like super cheap. They were like $50 a piece or whatever, yeah. You know? So going back to that, you're kind of like just scratching whatever you can together. Yeah. That $2,000 a month, it didn't go very far when you're doing construction. But, you know, I was terrified of heights, but, you know, we would go out there and climb right up there, just screwing boards in and then get the, you know, I remember we did one where it was in the woods. Mm-hmm. We didn't really have enough money to clear the property. So we just got good chainsaws out, cut enough away, and then drove the line truck in there and just started setting poles.
Wow.
And then it was actually a really big development across the street. And they rented the sign before we even cleared it. And so that was, you know, $1,000 a month. And so then we just kept kind of stacking those kind of deals in there. And that basically saved the company to be able to pay all the expenses, to pay the landowners. But it was just robbing Peter to pay Paul, mm-hmm. too, at that point where, you know, you would, instead of paying the guy land rent up front for the year, you would just say, hey, can you take it monthly? And then you would take, you know, the $2,000-$3,000 a year you're supposed to pay him, and you would try to build a sign with it.
Wow.
To regenerate that revenue. So it was just basically, you know, at that point to be able to build it up, you just had to be just super grind it out, mm-hmm. like, you know, and get out there and just roll your sleeves up and chainsaws and
get after
drills
it.
And yeah. out there trying to do it, you know. And I was not a construction, you know, construction has never necessarily been my strong suit. So, but I did it, you know. I did what I had to do to get there, you know.
Of course.
So
that kind of stabilizes over time. Through this 2008, 2009, 10, you start to get some money to feed it in, but you get to 2014. Sounds like you had somewhere around 200 faces, maybe somewhere around there.
Yeah.
What made you want to split, and like how many did you, what did you envision differently when you were going out on your own? Like what kind of made you want to start Gray Outdoor? And then what did you think you wanted to do differently? Or is there a new market that you were kind of focused on? What was the new plan?
I think we just were probably two different personalities, I think, too, where, you know, how, I mean, partnerships are always going to be tough, you know. I mean, unless you really have the perfect complementary partners that are really have the same vision, yep. as each other and have similar values as well, mm-hmm. on what's really important to them in their lives, you know. You know, I'm a family guy. I've got three kids now, so the family is super important to me. Yeah. You know, these... and just being a good person, a good friend, a good family member, just things go, having similar values in a partnership is very
critical.
Important,
yeah.
you know? So not necessarily wanting to go in a different direction, business wise, I think we just really after a certain point, you know, we kind of grew apart.
Yeah,
you know?
That's fair. It
happens. I obviously was super grateful for my experience in the partnership, but I learned so much in the process of actually going to split up those assets. Mm.
Did you end up with? Sorry to cut you off. What did you end up with out of the 200 or so?
So it was about half and half. Like okay. We actually drew a line. It was almost like a line of, it was kind of really north and south because at that point in time, we were still based mostly out of Wilmington, but we kind of drew a line like somewhere around I-40. That was about where the line was down I-40. Yeah. And I kind of took south, maybe plus or minus one or two. Yep. We just tried to really just split up the revenue because if I remember correctly, it was maybe, you know, we were billing. Decent company at that time. It was, we just tried to split up the billing and to where it was about, you know, half and half. He got half and I got the other half. And then it was that this kind of actually went on really for a couple of years. I was kind of tied to it because eventually I sold that real estate development. I think I got like, you know, $80,000 out of that deal after I sold it and, mm-hmm. cashed that out, and then I put so much of that money back into Waterway Outdoor that, you know, kind of when I decided to start Gray, it's like, oh my God, I put everything I'll put all my eggs in this basket with this other company, and now I have to basically start over, you know. And so by the time we got done with the splitting up of the assets and finishing up that, which was about 2016.
Oh, wow.
It really took a while to get that done. I wanted to just get it done.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that the other side was almost like, let's kind of, I'm already kind of like, I've been kind of like preparing for this on my own. So it's kind of like, I'm already kind of on my own. I'm already kind of set up. I've got my, you know, my kind of like money here on the side and all this, when I had all my eggs in that basket. So it was like, longer that I can drag this on for longer, I can drag Gray in this. Like, it's better for me.
Yeah.
I was like, I just got to get this done so I can just get a fresh start and start over. And not around the time when I got married too in 2015, that was going on. So I was like, man, I just, you know, the fresh start. I got married in 2015. And then 2016, right around then, we finally got the split done.
Yep.
Move on. I can just, now I'm free, you know. And then
for 2 years till you have a kid.
Yeah.
First kid.
Like, free enough. And,
yeah.
And I remember that being an election year too. So I remember like, now this is my time, you know, like this is my time, because I had a lot of experience, you know, at that point in time.
Yeah.
I'd been through almost multiple careers at that point. I was like, this
accounting,
is
real estate. 7 years billboard.
Yeah, and then several years of in the billboard business. So I had a lot of experience, and I had a good group of, you know, assets to start. So that was huge. You know, I didn't have any money, and but I had these assets that I could leverage.
Yeah,
and that was huge. You know, to be able to get started again. You know.
Yeah, and I'm sure a lot of good people, relationships, because you've been in this county, right, doing good business for a long time, and then good systems, understanding how to go find deals, like your own business development philosophy or whatever you would call it. So right now for Gray, you guys have what seems like on the website, four different services, right? So there's billboard, and then you have artwork and design, which, okay, we want to sell an ad space. That customer placing the ad wants you guys to design. That seems like, I guess, the other line. You also do the constructions of billboards too. And then lastly, I saw like maybe social media or online marketing. So, so right now for you, how do you value the business? Is like majority of cash flow coming from essentially allocating capital to go buy new good billboards that spit out a lot of cash? Like, how much do you focus on driving revenue from the artwork? And then conversely, are you doing construction for other guys' sites that are doing billboards, or do you only construct your own?
Now we mostly do all our own signs, mostly.
Yep.
We can do it for other companies, but we typically just, we're so busy doing our own that we just really won't have a lot of time to do it. So that might be like a cherry pick of one. Hey, you know, and then artwork is mainly, you know, for our own stuff. I mean, we're doing tons of artwork
for your own customers,
for our own customers, for on our own signs.
Yeah.
We do have a few signs, maybe, you know, handful, you know, 15, maybe 20, 30 faces that we manage for other owners that might be a mom and pop, have one or two signs.
Yeah.
That don't ever want to sell or won't sell, or, you know, just they need somebody to help them. So we'll do that. Which was one of the ways that when I transitioned to Gray Outdoor, was one of the ways I generated a little bit extra cash flow to be able to build more.
Was through design work?
Was through doing some of the management of other signs.
Okay.
Yeah, so that was something that, because it didn't take any capital, because this business is super capital intensive to be able to build your, you know, every new site. You know, you're out there spending $30,000, $40,000, $100,000. To put up a, you know, a sign or a new digital, you know, you're hundreds of thousands of dollars in this.
Mm-hmm.
So super capital intensive. But so you had to build up the cash flow to be able to leverage that cash flow into the next deal.
Yeah.
But the majority of our revenue, I mean, you know, 90, almost close to 100% is just through our billboard rentals.
Mm.
It's through the rental revenue. We typically, our production costs covering mostly our costs for maintaining.
Got it.
And the labor to change them, to print, the new vinyls on our static signs, and then artwork for digital. So the majority of that's kind of more or less a wash. There's a small amount of revenue from it, of net revenue from it.
What percentage of your signs is build versus buy? Like, what did you guys develop versus would you acquire?
So we've acquired a few different, like, smaller companies. I've bought, HBI was a big one. They were based out of Whiteville. That was probably 40 faces. And the Cardinal Sign Company in South Carolina that we bought was, that was like a 40 faces. That almost goes to Charleston, like down kind of more in the outskirts, like Florence to Charleston, out in the, you know, I won't say the middle of nowhere, but a little bit. Yeah. It's starting to grow. Yeah, it kind of is a little bit, you know. But those were really good acquisitions for us because they were kind of deals where not really that many other people were really wanting it. So they're really like fire sale type prices, you know. So for me, it was like, oh, man, I can get this, and this really will help us build this company up. But build versus buy, I mean, we've built I'd say probably 75% of the signs that we have, we've built, and then we've acquired a small amount.
The other,
because 25. The acquisitions are typically going to be a more expensive deal, you know, to go buy a small company that's well built and well operated. You're still paying that high multiple.
But then it's just a cost basis business. Like, you only make money based on a good purchase price for acquiring that type of deal. So for you, at that point, like, with developing being the, I guess, the 75%, like, what areas, how do you know what areas you want to go into, especially new markets? Because it's not like you're just Wilmington. You have so many signs across both states at this point. Like, what makes a high revenue generating area? Is it solely based off traffic and then traffic count, and then also is it very contingent on the amount of time people are stopped? So stop lights, you're valuing stop signs, maybe a curve in the road. Like, how do you value a new market? Or
So the visibility is the visibility is the key to really a good site. Period. Is visibility.
Okay.
You know, like you said, a curve, a stoplight. Those are going to be keys for our placement wise, just placement wise, but placement wise isn't going to necessarily be everything. It's going to be almost, obviously, you know, where there's ordinances that are friendly enough where they're not like, no, heck no. But you know, we've gone to some of those places and gotten them in too. So, you know, there's always a way. Really, you sometimes you have to expand your horizon to go a little bit further out than where anybody else wanted to or tried to go. But being able to pick the right sites is really important. But being able to pick the right site and then also be able to get a permit, that's really the big trick, you know, to be able to find a place where it's really good visibility wise. Because, yeah, your traffic metrics are going to be what we – our advertising rates are based off traffic, you know, how many people are seeing it. But then also, what's the market like, you know? Just the same as if you were in a commercial, you know, if there's 100 offices along this stretch, you know, I'm going to get probably a little bit lower lease rent. I'm going to get a little bit less rate if there's a lot of available inventory.
Supply and demand.
Yeah, so it's, and every single sign is the supply and demand process as well, too. So that's really a big thing is, you know, how can, you know, you find a place where it's there's demand and then it's not overbuilt either. So that's really – but then with where we're at now, because the industry is at such a mature stage that, yeah, it's hard, you know, it's a hard, that's a hard point.
Especially this market, the Southeast, or like just Myrtle Beach, Wilmington, super billboard.
Yeah. A lot of people
they're everywhere.
Yeah. And then people want to be here too. So it's, and it's been, you know, it's picked over and picked over and picked over. So you really, you just have to be more creative, and it might take, you know, years, to do the deal. Like I was telling you about,
yeah,
you know, the signs on 40, there was, you know, where we built 8 signs in a row, if you ever drive from Raleigh to Wilmington, you'll see, okay, there's this, all these great billboards.
Is this the 13-year one?
Yeah. I just saw the signs just pop up, you know? Yeah. Like 2 years ago, people were like, man, those look great. I'm like, man, that's great. I'm glad people are seeing them, you know? Right. It just seems like it just happened because everything happened. They got built super fast. Yeah. But they didn't see the 13 years before that I was working on trying to get that, you know, permitted.
Yeah, let's talk about that in a second before I forget. So in kind of bringing us to modern day, so you start with those 100-ish signs in 14. Now you've got 700. What do you think was the hardest doing this on your own? Like, what was the biggest challenge along the way in adding another 600 faces in the next?
First it was this construction, man. Mm-hmm. Like, I really it was never my strong suit. And when we had the partnership with Waterway, that was his part of the business, was really the construction. I was the business guy. Right. Yeah, that was one of the things we didn't really – he wanted to be the business guy, you know. And I was like, well, you're the best construction guy, you know.
Yeah.
So you kind of got – sometimes, at least for me, I got to know where my strengths are, you know.
You have to.
Like, I know where what I'm good at and what I'm not. And then I've – and luckily, when I met Andrew, and that was 2014 or so – Andrew was working at the Honda plant. He's my main guy
now
for construction and maintenance. I mean, they just do everything for me. Cool. And he was really good at it. He came out there like, I was like, man, I really need help doing this vinyl. And it was over in Florence. He went out there in 10 minutes. He was done with it. I was like, this is going to be my guy. Like, he's working at the Honda plant. I was like, Andrew, I just need you a little bit more than like just the weekends. I'm like, would you consider just going, you know, would you consider, you know, just coming, you know, would you consider working, you know, a little bit more with me? And he's like, mm-hmm. He started seeing like, okay, yeah, Gray's going to keep growing. And we, you know, I think he saw there was an opportunity. He quit his job, which is a really good job at the Honda plant over in Florence.
Yeah.
And he left his job, and then we've been together since then, and he's just been a complete blessing. Because the construction side was really hard, because then it was like I know how to run the business and do everything, but when it comes to that side, it's not my strong suit, so I've got to kind of relearn everything, where I was letting my partner do all this stuff on that side of it, because I was like, you just deal with that. So then it was like, I've got to really learn how to do this so mm-hmm. I can get somebody who can help me to do it. And so with Andrew, really just kind of had to keep learning with him. You know,
of course.
So we had to learn a lot together. And then getting the people that would actually come and help to be able to build these things.
Yep.
That was probably my biggest challenge. So for many years, that really was slowed us down a lot, which is why I was acquiring, you know, working on trying to acquire other small operators as opposed to build.
Mm.
Now we can just like, you know, build, you know, super fast. Like we weren't able to in 16, you know, 16, 17. Also being like, you know, a new business that really just more or less didn't really have any money to build or grow.
Right.
It was like kind of like you're just starting over again,
mm-hmm.
you know, and with the billing that we had, that to be able to take that cash flow and to be able to keep reinvesting it, that
right.
was basically what we had to do again, you know.
Wow.
But I did have a lender. Whenever we split the company, I had to pay off half my loan.
Oh.
Half of the debt, which was, bickering over that was annoying. It's, you know, like, hey, man, we're, you know, so I'm paying, I had to, you know, bring
like the
in
loan
my
was called? Like when you split, you're saying?
Yep. So we had to pay off the existing lender.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So, but it was actually my lender at the time was the lender that we had the loans with that had to be paid off.
Got
so
it.
they were my lender. They kind of went with me, you know,
mm-hmm.
in the deal, because I had kind of put everything together to get the loans to begin with for us to be able to build the Waterway. And then, so they were my lender, you know, because it was really more refinancing with them and then
mm-hmm.
getting, you know, credit lines to be able to start building again.
Wow.
And just acquiring, you know, one little sign over here, which this year we're going to be rebuilding some of those, you know.
Oh, sweet.
Some of those signs that some of the first ones that we had acquired, we'll be rebuilding them and do
awesome.
Digital signs. So, yeah, like to be able to acquire
convert,
those.
Yeah.
And now to be able to have the time and – resource to be able to convert them and make them into what they should be, you know.
That'll be sweet. Kind of in wrapping up a little bit, is there any deal story in your mind that, or any deal story that comes to mind? I know we talked about that eight sign deal that was over that 13 years, and you also mentioned that 40 face acquisition. Any one that you want to kind of go through in detail?
Yeah, probably the Lee Outdoor was a big one.
Which one was that?
It was an eye doctor in Wilmington. He had three signs in Wilmington.
Cool.
And that was really a big deal. Someone I had my eyes on for many years. You know, he had really two really nice signs in Carolina Beach Road. And
what year was this that I guess you started thinking about it, and kind of what's the background?
Yeah, so I've obviously always seen these. Like, man, like I need to, you know, and I had like to build a little bit of a relationship with him, and I helped him rent a couple times. He had them available, and I helped him rent them. Mm-hmm. So I had built a little bit of a relationship with him, and he was kind of getting up there in age, retired from being the eye doctor. And so we had a little bit of a relationship, and even at one point, cause he was like, kind of, I'm going to upgrade these signs to digital. And so I was even helping him like chase down some of that stuff. And then he's like, ah, you know what? I just don't want to do that right now. I'm kind of, you know, getting up in age. And, mm-hmm. you know, somebody from like Florida or Georgia or something called me and said, hey man, there's a guy over here that might be selling some signs. And I was like, oh yeah. I already know that. I'm helping him. You know, I feel like I already had a relationship with the guy. So I'm like, how do you know? I'm like, oh,
who's
my God.
Who's this guy? Who's Florida guy?
It was just like somebody who's in the business that like
he trying to buy him too, or he's trying
apparently,
to help you?
Like he was just calling everybody like trying to see, hey, if I can find
check
somebody who will pay the most money for these signs, you know. Whoa. Who's going to pay me the most money for these signs, you know? So he's just calling everybody. And so I'm like, oh my God, I gotta figure out a way to do this deal, you know. Mm-hmm. And I gotta step up. And you know, this is only probably 3 years ago. So around COVID time, I was like, I really got to step up to buy these assets because they, you know, I had been working on the Wilmington stuff for many years. So it would have been perfect complement to these assets that we had already, you know, a few other assets we had around. And so, yeah, those three structures, and we, you know, were able to buy the land. And a funny story actually about that deal was, I had, you know, a contract with him to buy the three signs and the three properties where mm-hmm. where the signs were sitting. It wasn't the whole tracks, but it was there were small tracks just big enough for where the signs were and easements to view the sign.
Okay.
So we had easements on the remaining surrounding property. And all in between. So we're under contract to buy the deal, and in the middle of it, there, you know, this is a, you know, I don't know, it's 20-acre tract on Carolina Beach Road. There's not very many of those around Wilmington, you know, every single one. Big outfit out of like Ohio or Indiana or somewhere up there mm-hmm. came in and went under contract with them for, you know, I don't really know the amount, but it was multiple millions and millions
of dollars. To develop the land.
To develop this property into an apartment complex. Mm-hmm. So it was like 250 apartments they were going to try to build on this tract of land. Of course, I'm like, one day I'm like reading, or, you know, I'm scrolling through and I'm reading, you know, this company's applied for a rezoning on this property. I'm like, wait, that's the property I'm under contract to buy. I'm like, oh my God. I call the guy the next day. I'm like, what are you doing? He's like, oh yeah, yeah. I forgot I was going to tell you. I'm like, yeah, but I'm under contract to buy these properties.
Who's saying that?
To the seller, to my seller. I called him the next day and said, hey, what are you doing?
Yeah.
He's like, oh, I'm going to sell the property to these guys. So now you got to negotiate with these guys.
Oh.
I'm like, are you kidding me? I'm like, I've already had a deal with them. You know, I'm not negotiating with anybody else. I've already negotiated a deal with you. I'm like, well, we're in the middle of still negotiating those easements for your visibility and blah, blah, blah. I'm like, oh, God, okay. You know, kind of freaking out a little bit because I've already put a lot of time and had a good chunk of money already tied up in, you know, in this deal. Mm-hmm. And working with our lender to do the loan mm-hmm. To buy these, and anyway, they, you know, I was able to work it out with these guys, the new buyer, and then they actually got denied the rezoning, so they didn't get the rezoning for the apartments, so the property's still undeveloped, so Anybody wants, yeah, maybe a tract to build some apartments, but yeah, it's going to have their biggest contention was that they had to have some mixed use. The commissioners wanted mixed use.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't want just straight, and it was packed in there too. I mean, it was building, and you're near a subdivision that's, you know, residential subdivision next door, and it just seemed like a lot.
Right.
So yeah, I had to negotiate this deal with these guys. Anyway, they were out of the picture, and then I think we ended up closing the deal before they even got to their rezoning. But the biggest thing was, hey, you can't rezone the place where you're selling to me. You know,
yeah.
You're supposed to be selling this to me, and you can't rezone that because that's going to render all this stuff nonconforming.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to affect my use and affect the value of this.
Right.
So you're not going to be able to. That's not going to be possible. You know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's just not right. So yeah, that was like, you know, a lot of headache. And
how did it all come together at the end? They obviously backed out. You're saying the other team that was slotted to buy it?
Yep. Yeah, they ended up just backing out of the deal to buy it, and I think we had already closed before they actually ended up backing out of the deal.
Yeah.
But yeah, it ended up being a great deal. We converted to digital, relocated one of them to another site, and converted that to digital.
Oh,
so
cool.
Yeah, it ended up being a really good deal. It was one of those ones that you're like always a little scared to do because
yeah.
You're like, oh man, it's kind of a lot of money for three signs, but
yeah.
You know, it was worth it for me. I could justify doing it because it really complemented what we had. So maybe there's a deal you got to step up on every once
mm-hmm.
in a while that really. For your company, it might have more value. So for us, it had the most value because
right.
It really complemented our other assets.
Mm.
We were stepping up for it.
That's awesome.
And saying, hey, I want to get, you know, you just got to, but sometimes you have to step out on faith and just believe it's going to work out for the best. You know?
Yeah. That's a great story. So kind of in wrapping up, what are you guys focused on now? Like, so it's at the end of the year, right, that we're recording this. But what are you focused on for next year? Anything different other than just buying more good priced assets and building new sites? Is there anything else? I think you have a new Shalote sign, digital asset, that's coming to the market soon.
We've got some more permits and more construction
okay.
coming. And we're gonna upgrade a few of those this next year. Even down where when you come up from Myrtle Beach, you'll see a lot of like kind of older wooden signs. We're gonna
mm-hmm.
start upgrading a lot of those signs.
To newer structures.
So we'll start upgrading a lot of those older structures that might, you know, fall down soon. You know? They're solid enough, but they've worked out well for what we needed them for now.
Yeah.
But then we'll start kind of tearing those down and then we're still going to, you know, keep building new sites. So this next year we're going to keep like probably, you know, continue to expand out to further areas, you know, potentially different states. I mean, we've been looking at stuff in Florida and
big jump
and other like states, you know, Georgia and further west in Tennessee. And there's other opportunities to maybe have to go further, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really what we've really kind of wrapped up a lot of what we, you know, we've taken up every bit of space you
here.
Can find right
yeah.
here. So we're, you know, sometimes you got to go, you know, maybe a little bit further, you know.
Absolutely.
And, but as of like this week, there's not a better time than, you know, right before, you know, the new year to
yeah.
try to collect to collect all the rents that are owed.
That's
you
right.
Know?
That's
so
right.
That's what, like yesterday we were like, I was like, right now is the best time because you know what? Everybody needs to write off right now.
Exactly.
So they had, you know, any past dues, like let's get these things caught up and in the new year. So
yeah,
that's been,
smart.
Yeah.
Is there any other line of service or, and you kind of mentioned new markets you want to go to, but is there any other way you want to expand the business or service, whether it's kind of on the design or advertising side, just anything else that you want to add to the business that you haven't done or anything else you want to develop, maybe not billboards?
Yeah. I mean, obviously we've been, a big effort for us has been to own all of our sites, you know?
Cool.
So that's not really necessarily a new service, but
mm-hmm.
to own all the properties under our sites. And then now I'm kind of managing, like I was telling you about earlier, the
yeah.
other office building and the,
right.
the commercial properties and stuff that we're ended up managing, you know, commercial rentals
mm-hmm.
along with, But being able to buy out our existing sites to have them, you know, perpetually, you know, that's really a big thing for us. And that's been a big thing for me since we really started, was to own the sites, you know. Yeah. And the ones that we're leasing, hopefully eventually can purchase most of those. And long term, just continuing to operate and just keep growing, you know, really kind of just keep doing the same thing we've been doing, you know. Mm-hmm. I don't necessarily want us to try to stray off and do something else.
Of course, because, yeah.
And once now we've got a good system where we can really scale the business. Mm-hmm. And really our customers, just like to be able to keep helping them and keep helping them grow. That's been the biggest blessing of all, is to see those companies like really do 10 times. You know, the companies that have been with us from the very beginning that have exploded, you know, and yeah. they're doing 10 times the revenue. So like, yeah, they were spending 20 grand a year with us over 10 years.
Wow.
But now they're, you know, they're getting back millions. Their brand is like a million, you know, or they're $2 million more, and they're doing $10 million a year. It's like, to be able to see that kind of growth,
yep.
that's the most rewarding thing out of anything for this business, is to see the customers and to have that long-term relationship with them, and just to see them do really well with these assets. That's yeah. really the biggest thing, is like, it's, you know, obviously you have to make a living, but to see that us making a living off of helping those companies really yeah. grow, it's just that's the most
win-win.
Reward, you know. Yeah. It's just a win-win, and that's, if we can keep doing that, then that's just basically, that's where we, I really feel like we can keep, you know, keep helping more companies and helping them and believing in the product, and that's how we win, you know, is that everybody else wins, you know.
I love it. So to wrap up, is how can people get a hold of you? How can they inquire? Any larger sites that are available right now or digital you have available that you want to plug, so to speak?
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, any they contact us through the website is probably the easiest way. GreyOutdoor.com, GREY Outdoor.com. And contact us through there. Obviously, we have a phone number. You can call us there anytime as well. And yeah, I mean, we're mostly, you know, we're east of 95 is the majority of our assets. So, yeah. I mean, the eastern North Carolina, eastern South Carolina, that's the majority of our assets. So, mm-hmm. You know, any companies that believe that, you know, they want to grow, advertising with us will help them grow.
Yeah.
That's really the big thing. So we want to be able to help more companies and to really expand the knowledge base of these assets and how they really do help companies
mm-hmm.
to grow, because it's everything's become so much like digital focused, everything just online.
Yeah.
But there's really a healthy medium to advertising online, but then also having that traditional brick and mortar, the traditional advertising complements that online space so well
yeah.
that people, so when somebody searches for something, everybody goes to the Google. I mean, it's everywhere. They go to their phone
yeah.
and their browser. And if you want to find something, that's the phone book nowadays. So if you want to find something, they're going to that.
Yeah.
So everybody, it always gets all the reward. It always gets all the glory.
Yep.
Because they say, well, how'd you find us?
Mm-hmm.
We found you online. Everybody finds everybody online. That's how you find anything nowadays.
Yep.
But how, when you go to that space, that's a competitive space. How do I know when I go for, if I'm looking for a roofer and I go online and there's 10 of them. So when 10 of them come through, what is, who am I going to pick?
Yeah.
I pick the one I know the best, the guy that I see everywhere I go,
yeah.
the one that I drive down and I see, you know, XYZ roofing or, you know, Fulford Heating and Air. I see these guys everywhere. I'm gonna go to them because I've seen them over and over and over. So that's how they really differentiate. So a healthy balance of their spend online, you've got to be there. You got to spend money there, but
yeah.
don't forget about the traditional marketing. Really yeah. building a brand. You're not building a brand with a Google ad. It's just not really building your brand.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's no branding to that. It's basically
right.
just like the same text along, you know. It's this, all the stuff looks the same.
Exactly.
There's
yeah.
no branding. There's no differentiation in that space.
Yeah.
So how they really differentiate is through, you know, I believe through billboard advertising, they really can build a brand that people will remember when they get to that competitive space.
Yeah.
They'll remember that. They'll remember your name. And that's a big thing for us, is to get the word out about how these assets work and how they can complement what they're doing in this day and age.
Yeah. Yeah, it's fascinating. The billboard media as a whole, as I was kind of prepping for our conversation, there are a couple things that stood out that fall in line with what you just said, but everyone's trying to get first page, you know, on Google results, but it's like you get this billboard and everyone has to pass it, right? It's its own kind of first page. And the other thing, albeit wildly off topic, during COVID, there was a lot of media censorship. And I think I read one article you were talking about where it's like, hey, this may be the last, so to speak, free frontier where you can put up whatever you want on a billboard. I'm like, wow, it's kind of fascinating to think about, you know, because you can put whatever you need up there. And it's not censored. That is kind of crazy.
Yeah, that's something that kind of has kept, that's kept me in it too, because I feel like in that you can make a difference in your, you know, kind of more non-commercial type speech that is available. I mean, And political, I mean, political is big for us too, because that really helps them. A politician is going to build their brand off of that, you know. Right. So political is big for us too, and the political spend, obviously this year, I think it's going to be real big for us.
Right.
As we're really seeing, especially with digital, the ease of getting them up there. Mm-hmm. But yeah, you know, I think when we ran into that issue,
with the Brunswick County,
it's like, you know, Gray changed his mind. He's just going to, you know, take the ad down, because at a certain point, you know, it may not be worth it. You know, you want to just stick your ground and say, hey, yeah, it's just free speech. I mean, he wants to put his ad up there. Let him put his ad up there. You know,
right.
I'm not going to be the one who says that this is, you know, legitimate or not. Mm-hmm. That's not really necessarily my job as like a publisher, as to say, well, this is, I'm not fact checker, you know? Mm-hmm. And so if you want to say it, then you should be able to say it. You
Absolutely.
Know? And that's kind of, you know, I do really feel like that our industry is one of the, you know, pillar of free speech, you know, and it really does allow people to say what they want there. And so that's one of the things that, like I said, I think it's really kept me in it too, because I believe, and obviously I kind of follow what God's path has been for me to follow where, you know, am I going to stay in this forever? You know, a lot of people usually kind of, they'll build up a small billboard company and then they'll sell it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it becomes harder to kind of operate and scale, and the bigger companies really kind of, you know, can kind of, you know, just squashy, you know,
bulldog.
So a lot of people end up selling, you know, when they get to a certain point, they end up selling their billboard companies, but you know, something's kind of kept me going. And that's one of the things I think that's really kept, because I think, you know, we do a lot of stuff for nonprofits, you know, just free space for nonprofits. And, so that's really just a blessing to be able to do that, to help them grow, help them be seen. And that kind of non-commercial speech is, and that keeps people looking too, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's all just been a blessing to be, you know, introduced to the business and to be able to help keep our people grow, you know.
Yeah.
And it's always fun, you know. But it's just a grind too, like anything. It's a company, like any.
Absolutely, 100%. Yeah. I think that's a good place to end there. Again, thanks to Marshall Cooper for setting this up at United Bank. This was a ton of fun. Thanks for doing this, Gray.
Yeah, thanks, Matt. Appreciate it, man.